Welcome everyone to the second DL Game Club podcast. It is May 31st. We just got it in that second month. Nailed it, guys.
Yeah.
It.
Bi-monthly.
No, we're lying. It is deep into June. Sorry about the delay, guys. I have a whole plethora of excuses. I had a child, or more accurately, my wife had a child.
You were a little small part of that.
Witcher 3 DLC, Overwatch happened. Just a lot of stuff, but yes, I did get through it, and I am joined, of course, by Chad.
Hey.
Emilio.
Who?
And, of course, Bobby.
You guys took all the catchphrases. I'm sorry. I don't know what to say.
Hey, yo, and
they've had 2 months to come up with catchphrases.
Seriously.
So, you know, whereas I was thinking about this recently after listening to the most recent DL, just a normal podcast, and I thought that the motto for the normal one is where you have more questions than answers. For the DL Game Club, we're switching it around, and we're going to have more answers than questions.
Hopefully.
We decided that should be our motto.
That's a pretty lofty goal.
Between the four of us.
Maybe. We're trying. We're aiming.
But I did play the game, then I watched a 14-minute video, and then I watched a 12-minute video. So I think I have somewhat of a grasp. But it is a heavy game.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it, you know, whereas in BioShock, the kind of the kickers were really apparent, and you could really see them, like, they happened, right? Like, the would you kindly thing just happens. Whereas the stuff in Undertale, I think you really have to think about. It's not as obvious. It's kind of something that you might think about later and not even realize until you watch a video about it.
It's more like reading a book than playing through a movie.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't tell you everything, right? You have to make logical leaps.
Yeah, there's no official answers out there. Everybody, even the explanations that I watched are just theories, basically.
Yeah, there's a lot of subtext in this game, and it starts off with a character called Toriel, which I think I pointed out at one point was similar to tutorial. And there's a lot of things like that where they don't just come directly out and say it. You have to kind of read between the lines.
For sure.
So what did we all think of it, first of all? Like, did you like it, Chad?
I'm going to give a very, I guess, Chad answer and say that it was all right. Yeah. There were parts I liked about it and parts I disliked about it. I think on the whole, I'm glad I didn't purchase the game, but at the same time, I'm glad I played the game.
Well, it's only $10, so I don't think you're out too much financially by this game.
I think I would have been disappointed if I had spent $10 on this game. But I think outside of this game, there's a lot of things going on. You know, it was developed primarily by one person, and it tries to break a lot of gaming molds, and so I appreciate that aspect of it. I would have been disappointed spending $10, but I would have been happy to give the guy $10 for the effort that he put in on this game, you know?
If it was outside of the influence that it had.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. What about you, Bobby?
I like the game. I don't think it was particularly for me, but I really liked some of the things he did with it, particularly how unconventional it was, and it kind of went against everything we've been trained to, the way that we've been trained to play games before, where you go right in and you start killing things. And at first when I started playing the game, that was the attitude that I had. It's like, hey, there's a guy, kill it. But after a while, you realize there's other ways that you can go about it. And, you know, you can be a little more on the pacifist side, or you can do a little bit of both. So things like that, I really appreciated. But I kind of felt like this was geared more towards a younger audience. And some of the stuff was just a little bit lost on me.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
What about you, Tom?
I was not a huge fan. It was one of those games where I can see where people would think it's brilliant and why people would really like it. Especially after seeing, you know, I'll just come out and say it, like places like Reddit and the Steam reviews, it's kind of a huge circle jerk about how great the game is. But I think a lot of them kind of miss talking about the flaws. And so I expected to love it just based on the universal acclaim that it had gotten, and then I walked away from it really not enjoying it that much. And actually, not really something that I would recommend to someone unless they were looking for a really kind of unique experience and were willing to overlook some pretty big flaws.
Is that why you went Genocide, because you were so upset about playing it?
There was a little bit of you know, animosity that fueled that. No, I did that to, you know, because I think a lot of people, knowing that the game is so special, they'll all say, oh, I want to do Pacifist because that's what's so unique about this game, whereas I just decided to kill everything, and it was, I will say, it was satisfying.
I want to jump in on that pacifism thing a little bit. I was, after I beat the game, I was disappointed, and did a little more research into the game, I was disappointed that I had learned that the pacifism route is a way to go. If I hadn't known that, I would have gone in and just started killing people. And then afterwards, when you get the ending, it tells you that you can then do it a pacifism route. But right. My first playthrough, I tried to do pacifism. I didn't succeed. But then I learned later on, you can't even do the pacifism route the first time you play the game. The result doesn't work the first time you play through the game. So it was one of those things, like, I was disappointed that I tried to do the pacifism, because now I'm not going to try it. I already did all the things.
I totally understand where you're coming from, because I had a similar experience. I played the game practically twice. I started it and didn't make it all that far into the game, and then I restarted it again and made different decisions along the way. But this is a game that really benefits from being played multiple times, and this game is insanely popular with kids, with young people, and I really tried to understand why, to the extent of, like, asking them and questioning them, you know, what is it that you like so much about this game, and, like, observing them as they play this. And I think really what they took away from it was that there were so many little secrets about this game, so many little things that you could find, and you wouldn't find these unless you had played the game multiple times, or unless you talked to someone else who had played the game, because they would constantly tell each other, oh, did you know you could do this? No, how do you do that? Let me show you. And this game has, like, a culture around it on YouTube and everywhere else, where people have made videos, made art, you know, like custom-made stuff around it. It reminds me almost of, like, Nightmare Before Christmas, how it's become bigger than the actual original concept. It's just like a culture now.
It's deceptively deep. And I think it wasn't, no, I know it was intended to be played multiple times.
I don't know if I agree that it's, excuse me, that it's too deep, though, because coming off of BioShock, our first game that we did, I mean, that dealt with some really heavy issues. And then to go to something like this, there's a lot of things that are really creative about it, that are really quirky and unique, and, like, things that the characters do that are funny, but I don't feel like any of it is tackling with any, like, grand philosophical issues. Or maybe there is, and I didn't really pick up on that.
I didn't say it was too deep. I just said it was deceptively deep, because it looks cartoony on the on the cover.
Yeah, that's true. Especially a game that kids can pick up and play. I mean, I think if you want to read into it a little bit, the monsters and the humans and their war can kind of be taken several different ways with it, which can be compared to real-life moral decisions people make. So I think if you want to look into how deep it goes, you can find deeper meanings and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of lessons all over this thing, actually, you know, and it wasn't too heavy-handed. Actually, you have to kind of search for the lessons in the game. Personally, I enjoyed the game. I think all of us were kind of... we started at a negative spot with this game because we were kind of like under the wire and had to get it done under a certain amount of time. So,
think for yourself.
So I think we kind of I wouldn't say being forced, but just knowing that you had a timeline, I think changed the perspective a little bit. Tom, you probably beat it in a day or so.
Yeah, it was really fast doing the especially when you take out all the grinding, it is extremely short as far as actual, like, story stuff, because most of the time it's just kind of grinding, and then when you get to the battle, you can just truck right through it. It was pretty short.
I stick with my original assessment. I'm happy when I'm playing this game, for the most part. Like, it keeps me chuckling here and there, just enough to, like, get me through the boring parts, because, man, some of the, like, the first time I fought Toriel, to try to get her not to die is so hard. I mean, I probably put 30 minutes. This game probably took me way longer than any of you guys, because going the pacifist route, the bosses are nearly impossible to do. Well, I mean, they feel impossible to kill without killing, or pass without killing, I guess.
And that's why I ended up doing the sort of pacifism route, because I was like, okay, I guess you just can't beat the bosses the pacifism route, so I'm just going to beat them. And then I realized that I found out later on through Emilio that you actually can do it. It just is a challenge.
Yeah, Toriel won't kill you. That's your first. Like, yeah. Once she gets you low, she won't finish you off. So that gives you plenty of time to mess around.
Yeah.
Did you guys find the combat system challenging in any way? I know it kind of ramps up as the game goes on, as you fight harder and harder characters, but it's kind of like this arcadey type style where you control the heart and you have to dodge all the white stuff.
I really liked the combat in this. I was expecting turn-based combat like you see in a lot of other RPGs, especially before you actually get into combat and you're just kind of seeing everything. It just looks like, okay, it's going to be a standard turn-based RPG, and then you get into it and it's like bullet hell style, and you're like, yeah. Oh wow, this is really cool. And the changing of the heart colors to imply different things, that was a really cool concept. The combat for me was one of the shining points of this game.
For sure, especially like when you get to the major bosses. And how all the
some
little
of the ways
tricky
they do
things.
That is very creative,
super creative.
Yeah, I mean, for as little as this game has going on visually, like it has a very basic 8-bit, 16-bit graphic style. Like it does a lot with that. And again, like the same way with the mechanics of the game, it does that in like a creative way, just by kind of breaking tradition.
Tom, how could you kill Sans?
Just a lot of time, a lot of tries.
No, I mean, like, morally, you're a fucking jerk, dude. That guy's so nice.
That is a difficult battle, though. I watched that on YouTube.
Yeah, it was pretty difficult. And actually, I was going to say that, like, even though as a fan, I'm not overall a fan of the game, the thing that really stood out to me most was the characters. I thought that was, you know, even though they got a little bit chatty sometimes, Sans is a really awesome character. You know, you like him from the moment you meet him.
Both of the skeletons are
unique.
I think Sans really carries it. A lot of people will tell you that he is kind of like the even more popular than the main character.
Yeah.
The main character doesn't really have a whole lot of personality, really.
She's just determined.
Did we decide, is it a guy or a girl?
I think it looks like a girl, but
I figured it was a girl.
She's mistaken for Chara a lot, and Chara's a boy a lot of the times. So maybe that's, I don't know.
I thought it was a girl also.
Maybe their souls are just so,
you know, I think it might
similar.
Be a boy because at Alfie's, I think I'm pronouncing that right, the dinosaur triceratops or what have you, she is referred to as a she in the game, and she has like a crush on you. So I don't know, unless this game is really progressive, I just assume the main character was a guy.
But she also looks at anime porn, which is funny.
Yeah.
I'd have to say that's a good point about the characters, Tom. I think they had really colorful characters, and that definitely makes the game appealing. One of my favorite characters was that crazy robot Metaton.
Yeah,
all over the place.
Yeah,
you didn't know. I didn't know it was going. All right, question for you. I was waiting for Toriel to be bad the whole time, because you first get in there, and the first thing you learn is don't trust anybody because the flower, you know, tries to be nice and then tries to kill you. So, like, the first thing they teach you is don't trust anybody. And then they immediately go to this mother character. And I'm just waiting for her to throw me in her pot of stew and try to eat me or something. And went the whole thing expecting her to be bad. And then she she never...
Nobody's really bad.
Yeah.
Except for Flowey.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Should we go chronologically, Tom?
I was just going to... You know, I think the first major event in the game is the Battle of Toriel, and you know, one of my friends had played through it on Pacifist as well, and I had watched him, and so I know how it goes both ways. But what did you guys think of that first kind of opening battle, and how it sets the stage for the rest of the game? As far as, do you want to just kill people, or do you want to spare them? Do you want to be nice to them?
Well, right away, you know that this game has something tricky going with it, because it tricks you and then into killing her right off the bat, because she has like 3/4 of her health, and you hit her and it takes all of it, and you haven't done anywhere near that damage before that. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I reset the game, and then I didn't know who was talking at me at the time, but I later learned that it was Flowey, and he was like, oh, you went back in the game. Oh, you saved. You think you're safe because you saved. I don't think you are. And then I was like, what the fuck?
That's cool.
Flowey is one of the scariest bosses ever because of his control of the actual files of the game.
Like how he breaks the fourth wall sort of thing?
Yeah. Well, yeah, just not just that, but he affects your saves.
Yeah. Or at least he says he does.
He actually does.
That's some Psycho Mantis shit right there.
Yeah, for sure. So then I went back and then I saved her the second time, and that, you know, it's a rough little fight. What did you guys do?
I killed her.
I thought that's what you had to do. Like I said, yeah.
Well, the first time I played through the game, I did it like you said, I had been tricked, and the second time I did it, and this kind of set the stage for the rest of the game for me. I killed him because I was too lazy to spare him or go through the whole pacifist route. The pacifist route, how long does that take? If you go full pacifist, that's like an 8-hour game.
How long did it take you guys?
It was longer than an 8-hour game for me. Just doing it sort of.
Okay, maybe I'm thinking of the YouTube video I watched where the person knew exactly what to do. But if you go full genocide, you can run through this a lot quicker.
Yeah, it's a quick game.
How easy is it to kill everyone? Because, like I said, I didn't kill anybody except the bosses.
Yeah, I mean, I had to grind sometimes in between bosses just to get leveled up enough, but.
What do you mean by level up enough?
Like you level up if you kill things.
Yeah. You get XP.
Yeah.
Because that was my concern the whole time, because I was doing the mercy way the whole way, and I was be like, oh shit, I'm not gonna have enough XP. There's no XP. I'm not earning any XP. Right. I'm gonna not be able to do anything.
Right. So how'd you kill the bosses then if you never leveled up?
I just killed. That was my whole point. Like, obviously, XP didn't matter because.
Right.
And then you learn at the end. Obviously, you learn at the end. It's not XP. It's execution points or whatever. So.
And LV is what?
I forget.
LV was love, but determination is the.
Love stands for level of violence, and XP for execution points. But I thought that was one of the coolest things ever, because they set it up at the beginning for you to want to earn those, and so you have to go out of your way to not earn them.
Right.
Yeah. See, and again, taking something that we have been trained on our entire lives playing video games and just flipping it on its head. I love when games do that.
Yeah.
And I think this is having effects outside of this game. Chad, we're playing Overfall. Right?
Overfall, yeah.
Yeah, we both touched on it. And several times in the game now, I've gone the non-violent route with orcs. I talked them out of, like, fighting, and then with some other factions, I've just, like, found another route. So I don't know if this game had some effect on it, but it very well could have.
Yeah, it could. I want to talk kind of, for me, the elephant in the room, and that's the art, because I can't stand the art. I barely could look at this game while I was playing it, and some people are saying it's not that bad, or some people are saying it's kind of got its own unique style. I literally couldn't stand the art in this game. And am I the only one that was feeling this way?
Most of it's pretty bad, but there are some shining things that happen that. There's like a couple characters that really stood out to me where I actually stood around them for a little while. Like Undying, I think, is really cool looking, and Asgore might be my second favorite, if not my favorite guy.
Yeah, Asgore was cool.
Flowey is super simple, but also I don't know, something crazy about it.
Like, yeah, I actually think that the evil version of Flowey actually looks pretty awesome, but the normal version is just really really bland.
The plant, you mean?
The final boss that you're talking about?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that real quick?
Or jump into the end? I thought we were going chronologically.
Well, I mean, I think we're going to get to the same thing for every fight. we killed it.
And I didn't.
And you didn't.
Yeah.
And
there, not just that, guys. Like, it definitely took me longer, way longer, because...
Did you end up doing Undyne? Because you were struggling with her for a long time.
It was really... I had to look... That's the one I looked up. That's
okay.
The only one I looked up. Because you have to do things outside of the fight. You have to run, and then physically run.
Yeah.
Away from her. And I was running... even though after I read the thing, I ran the wrong direction. So I was like, what is going on? She's not chasing me, but you have to run north instead of east or whatever. But and then she falls over, and there's a water cooler right there, and because she's exhausted from chasing you.
Oh, gotcha.
And you give her water, and then she starts to be kind of okay with it.
I thought it was kind of cool with the Undyne character also, because she's chasing you and trying to kill you, and then when you get into the fight, you almost sympathize with her. Like, she's...
Oh, yeah.
She's talking to you why she's doing this.
Yeah.
And it makes sense, you know? Like, it's like, maybe I'm not the good person. Maybe I'm a little bit of the evil person, similar to, like, Braid or something else like that.
Mm-hmm. And that was a really emotional part of the game, at least for me, was that, because I killed her in, like, those last few stabs. You know, she's trying. She's giving it all she can to survive. And, like, with every stab, she's, like, doing one more thing. Yeah, it was... that was a rough part, but... you know, the game had a... were there any other points for you guys like that in the game? Because
I
think that was about the peak of it for me.
The end, when you realize that you're going to have to kill because the whole time I thought the king wasn't really that good, and people just have seen a good side of him, and I'm going to get to the king and realize he's a bad person. Nope.
Meanwhile, the nicest guy ever.
Yeah, you get to the end, and you're like, well, shit, I got to kill this guy if I want to go through. Like, I was like, I kind of don't want to finish this game. I kind of want to just let the king live in my own little save file.
Yeah.
You know?
So you killed the... How did you guys kill the king, man?
I didn't have a choice.
He was easy not to kill, I thought. He was one of the easier ones for me.
Yeah.
But by then, I had a lot of practice. But not... I want to expand on why it took me so long. Some of the regular mobs took me a long time to figure out how to not kill them.
Really?
The Washer.
Oh, that one guy was simple.
Joshua?
With the green heart that
I could not
capture.
Figure it out.
Because, well, green's always good.
But I kept missing that green one. That was pretty tough.
It heals you, too, so you just had to be close to the thing that was spinning.
Yeah.
And don't worry about getting hit, because when you hit the green heart, it'll heal you back up.
I see.
So...
But, yeah.
Well, we talked about the protagonist a little earlier, at least in regards to gender, but what did you guys think of him, her, otherwise?
Frisk is her name, so we could just call her Frisk.
Frisk. Because I kind of felt that it was your typical, somewhat silent protagonist that you,
definitely,
as a player, were supposed to project yourself on, and so they didn't want to create too much of a character to get in the way of the actual player feeling like they were in the game making these decisions. I don't know. That was my interpretation. I don't know if you guys felt differently.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Especially such a game of choice, they really want it to be that blank slate, like you said, so that you can have the feels of that character.
And
they don't want to make it seem like you're just reading someone else's story.
Yeah, and I was surprised at the end. I was expecting more of my story. More of Frisk's story, and you didn't really get any of that.
It's really more about the royal family. The whole story is about the royal family.
Yeah.
So what kind of ending do you... I'll tell you what I got. I think I got a normal ending, but then I didn't get the true pacifist ending because there's side stories that you have to complete, and I had done them all except for one. But that, by that point, I didn't feel like going back and doing that because I guess I was supposed to take a cooking class with Papyrus, I guess. Did you guys, any of you guys, do that?
What I read...
Oh, you killed Papyrus, so you couldn't have.
What I read is that you couldn't get the good ending the first time through. You have to have Flowey tell you play it through it again.
You can get the neutral ending, but you can't get the true pacifist ending.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that.
Before we get to the ending, though, can we talk about the last boss and what the fuck is going on? Why did it go to a completely different game with different graphics and different things going on?
That was a little weird.
Are you guys as confused as I am, or was...
That's the thing. By the time I got to that point in the game, I was not thrown off by anything. Like, I was expecting the unexpected at that point, so I didn't...
I felt like I was playing Deus Ex, where the bosses were designed by somebody else, and suddenly, it looked just completely different. I was just
because Flowey is a being of pure power and with control over space and time.
Yeah, I feel like Flowey is like, what's a good analogy here? Like, who's that dude that made the Matrix?
The architect.
Yeah, Flowey's like the architect. Like, he, whatever it is, whatever gender the planet is, she kind of knows what's going on, is kind of in control of everything. Like, throughout the entire game, I felt like she was a presence, kind of pulling the strings.
Well, you find out, if you do the endings right, you find out that Flowey is actually Azrael, right?
Kind of. It's a soulless flower with the memories of Azrael in it.
So, according to Wikipedia, Flowey is revealed to be the incarnation of Azrael, created as part of Alfie's experiments.
Right. Alfie injected a flower from Earth, from human side of Earth, with determination, like crazy amount of determination. Mm. So it couldn't even kill it. Like, it was it was sprouted out with the dust of Azrael when he died and turned to dust. So his memories went in there, but it wasn't. There was still no soul in there. It was not. So it was just. It acted as if it was Azrael, I guess, but it had no soul. It was really confused. It was a really confused bad guy. It had no idea what's going on. So it tried killing itself, but it had so much determination that every time it would rewind the whole story, and it infinitely played the story over and over and over and trying to like come out with a better solution, but every time. So that's why it knows when I saved and stuff, because it does control. Flowey controls everything. It's God. It's God in the game. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's kind of what I was reaching for when I was trying to understand it. I was like, I feel like this is analogous to God or a God.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. So I'll just run down the story really quick in case you guys didn't have any holes. Frisk falls in the hole.
Yep.
And Flowey.
Or does she get put into the hole?
I don't know anything about that.
I don't know. It kind of hints that maybe you were given up or maybe you were abandoned.
Yeah, I kind of got that.
I mean, if you look at Frisk's face, you would know why.
Yes.
We don't even know what sex it is. Kick it in the hole.
Yeah, that face, though, is a face. Like, it's not even a face a mother could love.
Yeah, seriously.
So, when it falls down in this world that Flowey controls utterly, he decides to let things play out just to see, because he reminded him of Chara so much.
Who's Chara? I'm not sure I ever met Chara.
Chara and what's the prince's name again?
Azrael.
Azrael were same thing that happened to Chara happened or Frisk happened to Chara.
One was human, one was.
They're both yes.
One was monster, one was human, right?
So Chara fell down.
Okay.
And even though they had gone to war and got fucked up by the humans, that's the monsters right. so nice. They the brothers grew up together. That's they adopted right. him and made him a brother. But Chara's a evil motherfucker. He's really bad, and he bullied and fucked with Azrael all his life, but Azrael was completely good, and but he had to be bullied. He was, you know, kind of like a beta. And all Chara wanted to do was kill all of humanity. He's like a Hitler. He's like a little Hitler. And so he did all these different things to try to make that happen. So he might try to cause a war by poisoning Azrael and then asking him. Oh no, poisoning himself and then asking Azrael to bury him up surface side.
Oh, okay.
So when he carried the body up there, he knew that the humans were going to attack him because he's holding a small boy, right? So all the villagers started attacking him, stabbing him over and over. But Azrael's such a good dude, all he did was smile so that they wouldn't feel bad about stabbing him. And so he walked back to his cave and died in his father's arms. And then his dust fell on that flower, which later became Flowey.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's out there.
Seriously.
And then, so you know, I went through the whole game without killing anybody, and then you make Flowey remember who he is, basically, and he can't understand why he's doing the things. He's just a really confused being. He's not really anything.
Did you select to kill him or mercy?
I mercied.
Yeah, even though you had to click it like 10 times?
Yeah,
Yeah, I did the same thing. What happens when you kill, Bobby or Lab?
Lab, did you kill him?
I did, but I'm trying to remember exactly what happened. Let me look it up. I played this a few weeks ago, and it was in one sitting. Now, check.
I'm kind of wondering, how did this game look on your screen? Here. How did this game look on your screen? So I know you have a very large wide screen, and
yeah, it's an ultra wide. I don't even remember. I don't think that it scaled to the 21:9. I think it just.
Yeah, I played most of the game in windowed mode, and it was tiny.
Yeah, same.
It was like a thumbnail on my screen.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
You could push a button to make it.
Yeah, it was F4 full screen. Like, I remember that, but I don't even remember what it looked like. I just remember the button.
So why didn't you play it full screen, Bobby?
Because usually I had something else going on, too.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not going to catch any feels anyway.
Yes, in Heroes of the Storm, in the other one.
Yeah, but no, it was a good game just to have up in the side. It didn't take up much room, but I did play some of it full screen, and it just stretched it. It didn't really scale it.
Yeah, but it made it look even worse, if possible.
Yeah, it kind of distorted it a little bit, but, you know, it is a little more interactive when you play it in a full screen as opposed to that. And on a 1440p monitor, I mean, that is tiny. I think it defaults to 640 by 480 or 800 by 600.
Yeah, something like that.
Something very small.
A lot of people give this Game of the Year, guys, like multiple organizations.
And I don't think I can understand why they would do that. It's so different than
avant-garde.
Other things that you want to applaud them for that. I can definitely see that. It's just at the end of the... I keep saying that. I gotta learn not to say that. I didn't have that much fun playing this game. No. I could appreciate what it was trying to do, but that still didn't make it fun for me, so to speak.
I think we're somewhere where everybody's aching so bad for something new, if something new comes along.
You know, I think one of the possible reasons... Especially for, you know, granted I'm part of the younger generation, but I think I've played a lot more of the older stuff than other people in my generation have. There have been a lot of games that I've played that have kind of played with this notion of, you know, who's right, who's wrong, an alternative choice. But I think for the younger generation, the generation that seemed to especially like this, they haven't really seen that before. You know, all they know is year after year of COD. And for them, this really changes it up, whereas a lot of these themes have been explored in games past.
Yeah.
So I think this was just something that for them was really new, was really novel. You know, who knows?
Yeah. Well,
they haven't
also
even played games with 8-bit graphics before. Maybe they haven't seen kind of this charming art style.
Yeah. And I think that makes it more presentable to the younger people as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was just my thinking, is that... I think if you talk to people that are really veteran gamers that have been around for a long time, they'll probably appreciate it, but I haven't heard any of them really just fall in love with it like I've seen in so many places.
I got one more question. I don't consider this an RPG. I didn't level up.
I think you're meant to think it's an RPG.
Yeah.
You can, though. Yeah, it definitely takes that
framework, and then it, you know, like everything else, like I've said so many times, it twists it around and it makes it into something else.
I guess the reason I'm bringing this up is you could equip different weapons, but you were never necessarily supposed to.
Yeah, and the
it's
whole
never
leveling
really
up
a
an XP
choice,
system.
Right? Like, you just get new weapons and you replace the old ones, but.
Yeah.
Well,
right?
Well, I made sure to. Not put on the best, like the highest armor. I was doing things that would help me survive longer, basically. Mm-hmm. So there was a couple things that would heal you in between things. So I there's some strategy that went into it, because I was just a tank, basically, is what I...
Yeah.
It didn't matter what was in my hand. I think there was one thing that helped you heal that you could hold in your hand. So there's a little bit of strategy, but I mean, there's a total of what, maybe 15 items in the whole game?
I did struggle a little bit with... making sure I had enough healing items. Like, it was kind of touch and go a lot of times for me.
Yeah, I found that to be the most important thing. But you're right about that. You're meant to think it's an RPG at the beginning of it, and then when I started playing it right away, I realized, oh, it's not like this. It's more about the story. It's more about the characters. Like, it's got the framework of an RPG. It's got a leveling progression system, leveling up XP, inventory, you know, all these other things that are traditionally in the type of game, but that's not really what this game's about. And like, right away, I kind of learned to almost ignore that part. And if you play the pacifist route, it really doesn't have any bearing whatsoever.
Yeah.
By the way, guys, did you get to the point where Flowey turned the game off?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Flowey fucking closed the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he did.
And then it says the game name of the game is changed to Flowey World, and then it has Flowey everywhere. Did that happen to you guys?
I never got to a Flowey World.
That's why it's so fucking scary, dude.
I'm trying to remember it because I've played this game like 1.5 times now, and then I watched YouTube videos. I watched the pacifist run and the full genocide run, so it's hard for me to remember like the details of exactly what happened in my run and what I watched on a YouTube as opposed to what I heard some kid tell me happened to his game. You know, there's just so many different stories revolving around this game for me at this point.
I'm not sure if I've ever been, because he reached real world creepiness. He reached through greediness and affected real life. Yeah.
One of the best villains ever. Kind of the impact of that on me was lost because I see that and I go, oh, yeah, Psycho Mantis was a pretty cool boss battle, huh? And then, you know, kind of go from there.
Yeah, what'd you have
to
do?
For me, it was like that was done on the PS1.
You had to put the controller in the other
side. Yeah, put the controller down, and then he says, oh, I see you've been playing this game because he reads your save file and stuff like that.
Yeah. So
crazy.
Coming out of this game, I think the coolest, I think what I would be looking forward to most is seeing what Toby Fox is going to do next. Because this is basically a one-man show. He did the writing himself. He did the game design himself. He even did the music. He's not a musician. Mm-hmm. He self-taught himself to do the music. And I thought the music was a cool part of this.
Yeah.
I was definitely not disappointed.
He's a talented kid, man.
Everything really came together. And what's crazy to me is that this was not ever early access, right? Like, this game just came out.
This was Kickstarter.
It was Kickstarter.
Yeah, it was Kickstarter. So he did release.
Oh, okay.
So I believe it was up until you see the, like, Undertale kind of, like, intro screen. So it was up until the battle with Toriel, like that was the demo, quote unquote. Okay. So everything after that was a game that was released.
But still, that's pretty impressive to release the entire game like that. I mean, sure, throw out the tutorial part, but to release a game in its entirety and not have this be early access and not say, hey, these features are coming soon, and like go through that entire process, like to just give out this finished package, like that's very rare, and especially in the case of single developers.
Early on, there was some patches, but they were very small patches that added a little bit more secret stuff, I guess.
And, like, bug fixes and stuff. He did a couple bug fix patches.
Yeah, but there was no content.
Yeah. It was a Kickstarter. He won $5,000. He ended up getting over $50,000. And as of February 2016, he's sold over 1 million copies on Steam. So
good for him, man. And he didn't price it crazy. Like, it wins all around, right?
Yeah, he did it all around the right way. So I'm really excited to see what he comes up with next. I'm sure he got bought by some company. I'm sure he's working for some company now.
Oh, now he can afford to do things himself, too, though.
He probably makes plenty of money. He probably doesn't need that. He probably doesn't need to get picked up. He can probably just develop whatever he wants now. But I'm curious to ask, have any of you guys played To the Moon?
I have not.
I'm familiar with that game, but no, I haven't played it.
So it's another game made by some one-man developer, pixel art style, also like a faux RPG. And this game really reminded me of that. And I actually, I don't know, maybe that was another issue, is that for me, this game was constantly in the shadow of To the Moon, because even though this game was kind of clever, like, I'm not a big emotional guy, and To the Moon made me cry like 3 times.
Wow. Really?
And I just don't cry. I never cry, but that game made me cry 3 times. I probably didn't cry in 10 years. And so for me, that whole time I was waiting for this game to have that emotional impact, because when you go with this art style, you know, one-man dev teams are good at usually story and emotional impact. You know, they're not going to win you over in the graphics department or anything like that. So I was really waiting for it to have that kind of impact, and it just didn't. So I think maybe, you know, I don't want to do it right after this, but maybe in a few months when we're kind of ready to play this type of game again, we can go to something like To the Moon, which is really story-focused, really character-focused, and makes you have feels.
It's a PC
and play
game.
That game. And then, yes, it's PC. I think it's $5 on Steam. It's probably on sale for like $1 now.
Yeah,
Steam
I got it
sale.
On my account.
Is it a long game?
It's shorter, probably 4 hours.
I see.
For 3-4 hours. And there's no combat like you would have in this game. It's really more story. Sometimes it'll pull you into a combat like scenario, but it's more of a joke. Like you'll fight a squirrel and you'll like throw a peanut at him or something. Hmm. It's not serious like it is in this game, but that game to me was a lot more meaningful. And I think if someone came to me and said, hey, suggest to me a short, you know, single dev game with a really powerful story, I would definitely suggest To the Moon over this.
Okay.
So I think that was really just kind of the problem is that I'd played that before this.
Yeah. Yeah, that could definitely influence your opinion, but I am intrigued. We'll have to check that out at some point. Since we're kind of like closing up here, we haven't even discussed what our next game may be. Do you guys have any ideas or any opinions?
I think Gone Home.
I'm it's definitely like 1 or 2 hours, right? For Overwatch for July and August, probably.
We need something that's only like 1 or 2 hours.
Are we moving to bi-monthly? Is that what's going on here?
No. I think if we pick something that's 1 or 2 hours, we can get it in by.
Yeah. I think something like Gone Home or even Life is Strange, but
Stanley
that's an
Parable?
Stanley Parable. Really, Stanley Parable or Gone Home, I would be very okay with. I've never played through either of those, but I've played them enough to be intrigued.
Difficult, though. I mean, that's...
It's got so many endings.
Yeah, there's so much to it that it's hard to... You know, everyone's not going to have the same story to talk about.
Yeah, very true.
But
very
something
true.
With a strong narrative. And yeah, games like Gone Home, games like Life is Strange, you know, those episodics, those are always good. I thought for a moment a good one would be Max Payne, but I have had such difficulty getting that to run properly on my machine.
Which Max Payne?
Oh, the original.
The original. So I, probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, I just sat down on a weekend and beat all of Max Payne 3, and that was a pretty decent game.
Yeah.
And that ran really
that's
well.
An incredible game too, Max Payne 3. But it's been so long since the original, and I'm always intrigued by games that started these franchises and series too.
Yeah, and really just and kind of and you know, I don't know. Not that I know Chad super well, but I'd like to think I know him pretty well. He's probably going to say because those graphics just have not aged well.
Really? No.
I mean, Max Payne, that's really hard to look at.
Yeah,
I'd rather not go that far back.
Yeah. Either.
Well, we could take turns, and everybody gets a turn to pick a game.
Well, I just thought we'd throw some ideas out on mic, and then we'll talk more, obviously.
Okay. We could even throw it up to the Steam group as well.
Yeah,
just,
we get a listener
see,
that.
Make a poll or something, see if there's anything on there that someone maybe hasn't played and wants to play and have us discuss or something like that.
Yeah.
Can we just give a final thought on Undertale?
I was really impressed that you said that he did the music too. That's usually the one part that a solo guy can't do.
That he'll shop out. And actually, the music was fantastic. I'll definitely give him that. I really enjoyed the music. It was a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
This falls into the category of games that I really wish I had when I was young.
I agree with you.
You know, had I discovered this when I was like 12 or something, it would have been... this is like the game that I always wanted when I was 12. You know, when you play those old games, they're so rigid and they're so structured, and you're always, wouldn't it be cool if this happened? Wouldn't it be cool if that happened? Well, in Undertale, all that stuff does happen.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I admire it.
What's everybody's 1 to 10 for Undertale? It's weird, right? Because it's it means more than how good it was.
I would give it a 7.
Bobby?
I'm going to give it an 8.2.
Ooh.
8.2.
Is that an 82?
Yeah, that's an 82.
That would be an 82.
Tom?
I would give it a solid 60, but I'd give it the caveat that I think...
You can't caveat a score. You know, people just look at the score, so you can't...
I know. They don't like the caveats.
It's a 6-point caveat.
The individual parts are stronger than the whole, right? If you take just the music of this game, it's a much higher score than that. If you take just the characters, it's a much higher score than that. So I think... Yeah, I think it's a game that's really going to go with some people and really going to bounce off of other people. And that's something that the individual person is just going to have to decide, which is kind of why I hate assigning a score, but I'll give it a 60.
Okay, Emilio?
Yeah, Probably like an 8.
An 8?
Yeah, I think so.
Are you sure it's not an 82?
I could probably rate it higher.
Bobby actually rated this higher than everybody else.
For a joke, oh. Yeah.
For a joke. I'd do anything for a joke.
Cool, are we done?
Yeah, I think so.
Who wants to wrap this up?
Let's have Bobby wrap it up. Okay. He's been more lively on this episode of the Game Club than he has been on the last 10 episodes.
He's on vacation, that's why.
Yeah, he is.
It's a normal podcast.
If you call this vacation, somehow my vacation is busier than my normal work schedule so far. So
I think that's you love to schedule stuff, so.
No, I don't know. How that happens. But anyway, I'll wrap this up. This has been episode number 2 of the DL Game Club. Check us out at dlgaming.net. That's our website. You can get to everything on there. Thanks so much to everyone who's been leaving reviews on iTunes as well. That's like the number one way you can help us out. Yeah, we got some write-ups from Team Tom. We've got YouTube videos, hopefully more in the coming future now that I have a little bit of time off. But
we're going to post up a thread on our Steam group about this game club, and we appreciate your feedback. Let us know what you thought of the game, what you disagreed with us on, and what you agreed with us on. I know it's everything that I said you're going to agree with, but go ahead and tell everybody else that also. So,
cool. All right, anyone else got anything to plug?
Nope.
Nope, that's it.
All right.
Later.
See ya.
Titties. I could not get Bobby to say titties.